It is invariably the sufferers who bring first notification of it to the scientific community. Most recently, we certainly know that about the epidemic of AIDS and HIV and other health issues. Since 1998, the National Unidentified Skin Parasite Association, known as NUSPA, has helped otherwise desperate sufferers by providing them with an internet discussion board where people meet, share observations, come for support, and work together to get help. These are folks who are coming together who have sometimes what they describe as tormenting skin sensations and excoriations that their medical practitioners or physicians otherwise attribute to, and I quote, imaginary illness. One person shares her story, was begging her health officials in the state where she lived to help her get rid of the parasites that she knew were overtaking her home and burrowing beneath her skin. This health official gave her the number of a good psychiatrist. The stories are many. I will let Deborah Altshuler, who's been a very significant voice in support of many thousands of people who have contacted her through the National Pediculosis Association's development of a registry, talk about what this issue is. And I welcome her yet again to WBAI and to Health Styles. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Barbara. Good to be here.
Deborah, I think it's a good place to start how you became, in addition, we know that I've had the privilege of bringing the information about head lice to WBAI listener community over the last, I almost think, 10 years now. And you and I have been in dialogue offline, off radio, about this other emerging issue. Can you talk a little bit about the history on how you became involved in the effort of gathering information and supporting this community?
Well, the National Pediculosis Association is a very focused, small nonprofit that pretty much does what nobody else wants to do. We deal with head lice and helping parents who are panic-stricken about it, and most importantly, helping them to avoid making potentially harmful responses with certain chemicals or pesticides. So by doing what nobody else wants to do, we're also privileged, and I put that in quotes, to be on the receiving end of information that nobody else is going to get because they're not asking the same kinds of questions that we are. But in the mid-90s, we opened up a bona fide national reporting registry, the first of its kind in the world, where people who had lice or scabies could actually report an outbreak or report that their product didn't work or that their product may have hurt them badly. And in the process of doing this, we inadvertently opened up the floodgates for another population of individuals who initially thought they had lice or scabies, but in reality had a totally different problem. And so the lines of communication probably play as big a role in this as the apparently increasing incidence of this, where people initially treat themselves as though they have lice or scabies, or their physicians treat them that way, but there is no resolution of their symptoms, which are, as you had said earlier, horrific. The sensation, or the reality, let's put it that way, of bugs crawling under their skin, being bitten by bugs, not seeing these bugs, and having the people that they rely upon for support pretty much dismissing it as an imaginary illness. Even if it were an imaginary illness, which we have good reason to believe it's not, the lack of support added on top of the suffering makes it a horrific situation, and I'm happy to be here to be a voice for these people who don't seem to have a voice in getting the quality of help that they need.
The registry has been a support for a gathering of a lot of this information, and I note on your on the research that I've read from listed in, on your website that you then attempted to see what in fact was out there around what this could possibly be. And can you speak a little bit to that?
Well, we pretty much have been treated the way the sufferers have been treated. We've been bounced off of walls, as it were, looking for someone to give us assistance in getting to the bottom of this. And in the process, we more or less just kept doing the work. And in doing the work, we were able to get a basis and some common denominators in terms of what was consistent among this population. And this population also had consistent among them the experience of going to multitudes of doctors, sometimes 10, 15 physicians. It's a lot of money, a lot of time out of work, and still coming back with the same diagnosis of having an imaginary illness.
We have an opportunity to speak to someone, and the question that I wanted to pose perhaps be best posed to a gentleman whose name is David, and we will refer to him by his first name only for the program, to share a little bit, if you will, David, what the course of your own path has been in order to, after first experiencing these symptoms, and how many different evaluations, consultations, and regimens of therapeutic care you've gone through to this point in having had this type of health problem, if you would. And welcome to Health Styles.
Yes, and thank you for doing this program. Could you please repeat that question?
Tell us about your own story and what's happened in your course of identifying this problem, and when did it start, and what's it like, and how many different doctors have you been to, or types of therapies have you attempted to treat this?
Well, my illness started in July of 2003. And initially, I was told by my doctor that it was probably black flies, mosquitoes, or another small fly that we have around here called noceum. So I treated myself with insect repellents, and he said it would go away eventually once the cold weather arrived. And when it didn't go away, and by the end of September, then I was diagnosed with scabies, so I tried the scabies medicine, which is Quilada or Lindane. Tried them both, actually. And Lindane worked the first time, but after about a week or 10 days, it came back, and the Lindane didn't work anymore. The Quilada didn't seem to work at all. So then I asked to be referred to a dermatologist, which they did. And I went and saw the dermatologist, and he didn't get up from his seat behind his desk. He didn't even give me time to roll up my sleeve or show him any of my lesions. He said he knew exactly what I had, what parasite I had, and he knew what medicine to give me, so I was thrilled. So I took the prescription to my pharmacist, and she looked at it, and she started laughing. So I said, what's funny? What's so funny? She says, you don't need this. And I said, well, the dermatologist says I do. It's supposed to be for a parasite. She says, this is not for a parasite. This is for Tourette syndrome. It was called ORAP. So I took my prescription back out, went to see my family doctor again. And I said, what's the big idea? Well, he said, the dermatologist feels you have called it up here a psychoneural dermatitis. And you call it down there the delusions of parasitosis. I'm in Canada. Mm-hmm. I didn't tell you that. So I said, well, I'll try the medicine. He convinced me to try the medicine, so I tried it for about 5 days, and I actually became psychotic. So I stopped taking it, and I went back and told him. I said, I want to get another dermatologist. So he referred me to another one, and it took about 3 months to get to see the guy. He was the only other one actually within driving distance of where I live. I walked in. The same thing happened. He didn't come near me. He sat behind his desk and said, you've got psychoneural dermatitis. And the only medicine that there is for it is antipsychotic medicines. So I said I didn't give him, and I asked him at that. By now, I knew that the first protocol that they're supposed to follow as dermatologists is to do a skin scraping. I didn't know that before with the first dermy. So I asked him if he would do a skin scraping. He said, "What's that?" I said, I don't know what it is, but you're supposed to be able to do it if you're a dermatologist. Oh, he said, I don't know anything about it. I said, you're supposed to have a microscope here, too. He said, well, I don't have one. So I said, well, fine then. You know, I said, I'm leaving. I'm not taking your antipsychotic medicines. You guys aren't doing your job. And that was about as far as seeing doctors. I still continue to see my family doctor until the next summer was the summer of 04. Sorry, the summer of 03. And I saw a Lyme specialist. And he put me on antibiotics, and it helped a bit. But eventually we got to the point with the antibiotics that he couldn't bump them up anymore. Because I was third generation, and he said he wasn't allowed to go any higher than that without permission from an organization who've got the audacity to call themselves the CDC here in the province where I live. Can you imagine?
David, at this stage, what can you describe what your lesions were like and what this has impacted your day-to-day living?
Well, they started out just like seeming like mosquito bites with a little bump, except they were extremely itchy. But then after about 6 months, they'd gotten to the point where they were circular lesions about half to three-quarters of an inch around, and some of them were a quarter to three-eighths of an inch deep. When trying to wash them, bumps of things would come out of them. You know, that didn't look like it was anything human to me, but I couldn't see anything under a microscope that I could identify.
You started to look yourself under the microscope at this point?
Yeah.
Are you?
Because I thought